Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 297, recorded on June 4th, 2016. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. This show is sponsored by Atlassian, makers of collaboration software that let teams work and communicate better together. I am Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing great, and it kind of sounds like you might be doing okay, too.
I am doing okay.
Sweet.
Yes. I'm trying to get a hold of that... that new microphone, that used mic on Craigslist, but they haven't talked to me yet. Maybe they were offended by my lowball offer. Sometimes people get offended.
You mean price offer?
Yeah, you should be offended by their high price demand.
Yeah. What was it? It's a Blue Yeti?
Yeah, but the original one. Are they not selling those anymore? Is that why the price is so high?
That would be
no,
dumb.
I think they still sell Yeti.
Because $80 is like the list price.
Yeah. I said 40, and they didn't even say anything to me.
So unless it's a new inbox.
It's not. I mean, I think they have the box, but they've used it. Anyway, Adam Christensen is also here from the MacCast. How are you doing, Adam?
I'm doing good.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, it'll be good to have a more portable setup, because this is kind of a pain in the butt, and I'm getting out of here, so I'll need it. Speaking of things going on elsewhere, Apple has finally seeded press invites for the WWDC keynote, which will be taking place on June 13th at 10 a.m. Although the actual conference is taking place at Moscone West, the keynote is going to be taking place at the Bill Graham Civic Auditorium, as we speculated earlier on.
Yeah, that's kind of Apple's new venue for keynotes.
Yeah, it's a big place.
I think it's bigger, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Much bigger, especially since this is the only press accessible event that they're going to be having for WWDC. So it makes sense. And I'm guessing that by taking it to the Bill Graham Civic Auditorium, one, they're expecting more press, or they've probably invited more than they would in other years. And I would also kind of think, do you guys think that there's going to be some bigger things, bigger consumer-facing things than in previous years due to this venue change?
Maybe, but it might just be that since this is the only thing that the media is going to have access to, they just wanted a bigger venue.
Yeah, like just a logistical sort of thing.
Right, yeah, because developers get to go to this also.
Right. Yeah, you got to have enough room for them and for the press.
Right.
Makes sense. And, of course, Apple employees that are going to be there, who are also, a lot of them, they find out about this stuff at the keynote, too, depending on what team you're on, which is kind of fun. Apple has released, finally, iOS 9.3.2 for the 9.7-inch iPad Pro. They were experiencing error 56 bricking messages. So those 9.7-inch iPad Pros were crap in the bed when they were updating to that version. And so Apple seems to have fixed the issue. So if you have a bricked iPad, then you'll want to update through iTunes.
Yeah, because no one wants crap in their bed.
Yeah, no, especially not iPad
crap. Well, most people don't want crap in their bed.
Yeah. so,
wow.
Yeah, good for them. Thank you, Jeff.
I'm not judging.
Good. Let's see. Here's something interesting. Apple may introduce a next generation natural language API in its Echo competitor. And I would assume potentially in iPhones and iPads, just wherever Siri is. So the idea is that last October, this past October, Apple acquired a company called Vocal IQ. And they're a startup that has been working for the last 10 years researching natural language, belief tracking, decision making, and message generation in order to make something that's a heck of a lot better than things like Siri. The example that they give is someone asking for a nearby Chinese restaurant with open parking and Wi-Fi that's kid-friendly. But what if you change your mind an hour later? So you would simply say something like, find Mexican restaurant instead, but an hour later. And that'll bring you new results while still taking into account those other parameters like the parking and the Wi-Fi that you said before. The other things that are around right now, Hound, Siri, and other assistants would make you start the search over again, but Vocal IQ would remember, which is more human-like than anything available today.
Yes, it remembers context. Yes. And that's a huge thing.
Now, didn't...
Yeah.
When Siri was a standalone app on the App Store, it seemed like you could do things similar to this. So you would say, you know, find a Chinese restaurant with Wi-Fi and kid-friendly. But then she would show you something, and then you could say, like, never mind, or you could say, find me Mexican restaurants instead. And she
right.
would basically do the same thing, but it would be within the same conversational context, right? And I never, mm-hmm. it never
same
seemed,
session,
yeah, it basically. Never seemed like Siri did that. It still doesn't seem like Siri has that
it does,
ability.
It does in some areas. It still does in some areas.
It
on,
does it?
On the phone. Yeah.
For example,
oh man, it's been a while since I've done it, but I mean, you can look at the example. The best example currently is probably on your Apple TV.
True. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
So, but I'm trying to remember on the phone. I think if you even tried the restaurant thing that you were just referring to, does that not work? With Siri on the phone, I think it would. Again, as long as it's in the same session. I know, like when you're doing like chats and things like that, that always works because you can do the typical, you know, change the message or you can shorten people's names and she'll figure out, okay, you know, I might have, you know, dozens of people named Jane in my contacts list, but if I start a message to Jane so and so and then say send another message to Jane the next time she's aware of that, you know,
interesting,
and figure out won't ask again which Jane.
Well, it always seemed like it was more when you said, hey, send a message to Adam, it would effectively launch you into a Siri app for sending messages, right? And then you'd dictate your message and she'd say, is this what you want? And you'd say, change it. And those things where it's like, change it and do this and that. It's always felt like it's been a sub app.
When you do the weather thing, like, I think you can say things like, give me the weather for, and then a location. And then after you get that, then you can say stuff like, now for blah, 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 you know, some other location, or you don't have to say, give me the weather again.
Yeah.
But I may be wrong on that. It's been a while since I played around with that, but I remember playing around with that in the early days and there was some context to Siri, but again, it was very session driven.
Yeah.
And she doesn't put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah. It really hasn't yet become that personal assistant that we've all been hoping for.
Yeah, and the more important thing is Vocal IQ, they describe their technology as the first self-learning dialogue API. Mm. So it's not only just that one session, it's that it remembers and captures every session and then uses all of that data in future conversations to get smarter about how it's going to react. So once again, you know, it's the things of remembering my preferences and factoring in other data points that I think Apple really needs to work on, you know, such as location contexts and time contexts and starting to learn preferences of things like I like an aisle seat and I like to fly whenever possible these three airlines and my hotel preferences are these. And it can even get smarter where eventually if you're a frequent traveler, they know, she knows, okay, when in Chicago, Adam likes to stay at the Hyatt, but when he's in San Francisco, he wants to stay at the Intercontinental. And when he's, you know, in Seattle, it's some other hotel. So then when you say, hey, I'm going on a trip to Seattle, can you help me find a room? She can come back and say something like, oh, do you, you know, last time you were there, you stayed at the Marriott. Do you want to stay there again?
And then you say, sure. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. The pricing, you know, is... And, you know, and then she might even come back and say, oh, and yeah, do you still just need a room with a single king, non-smoking?
Yeah.
You're like, yes, that's what I want. Or no, you know, this time I'm staying with a friend.
Because, I need two kings because, boy, howdy.
Yeah, right. Or my family's going.
Well, you know, it would be all this stuff that you're saying, first of all, makes me a little bit nervous as far as actually booking a flight with Siri, as cool as it would be, because... We do want it to be our personal assistant, but it just feels like she's going to get the stuff wrong. But then that makes me think, oh, what if part of this is an app API where something like Kayak could be plugged into Siri?
Right.
Then I would be excited.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the other things that they're talking about.
Yeah.
So, Michael, keep in mind that the technology that will be driving all of this, it's the Vocal IQ technology. And this company, their objective before they were bought by Apple was to make sure that the interface they created, you could talk to it in normal conversation style, and then it could respond to you in normal conversation style, learn from you, and then react appropriately. Also, their system doesn't need to have nearly as much training to be far more intelligent than whatever else is on the market. So, you know, like Siri gets, what, a few million queries a day. And they started with like 10,000 queries. What they did was they hired a group of people and said, okay, your job is to sit here and just give our system these queries.
Yeah.
And after like 10,000 queries were in the system, it was already outperforming everything else.
Mm. Yeah. It was, I think the numbers are something like 90% accuracy versus about 20% for, at the time, remember this was back in 2014, I think, when they were doing this testing, it, you know, Siri and Cortana, is that what Microsoft is called?
Yeah.
And there was one other one in the space at that time. They were getting like 20% accuracy. So, I mean, it wasn't just significant. It wasn't just, you know, marginally better. It was like
orders of magnitude
better
at
parsing and understanding like natural. And we're talking about natural language queries where you're not having to throw in specific keywords and specific phrases so that the system understands.
Right.
And the reason being is that all of those systems like Siri is in its current implementation, somebody has to sit down and basically create the mappings of, okay, when someone says this, this is what they mean. When someone says that, this is what they mean.
Yeah.
Whereas the Vocal IQ technology is designed to adapt and to, again, self-learn and figure out when you tell it, oh, no, that was the wrong thing you just told me. It learns from that. And it adjusts future queries based on that or future responses based on that. So,
yeah, and that's,
but I don't know why you'd be, why would you be afraid of the commerce applications?
Just because I feel, well, maybe because I'm a control freak.
And maybe you just don't trust Siri right now.
But nah, again, the system would learn those controls from you. That's just the point. I mean, that's the whole point. That's the goal. It has to get to that level of knowledge before it becomes useful and before you would trust it.
Well, I'm not saying I don't want that in my life. I do want to tell my phone to do all the heavy lifting for me, or have my virtual personal assistant do all that for me. But as it stands, she's totally incompetent.
Right.
So,
but that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the system getting orders of magnitude smarter with all this technology that Apple's acquired. And this isn't the only, you know, this isn't, Vocal IQ isn't the only company that Apple's acquired. There's also a company called Emolent. There's a company called Perception. There's the facial recognition one. So, you know, there's some rumors out there that if Apple does their own like Echo Home competitor, it may have cameras in it to detect. And a lot of people are reporting, you know, facial expressions in terms of loading up preferences. So if you're in the room and it knows you're the one speaking, it's going to adjust its preferences and reactions based on that. But the other thing about the facial recognition technology is they can also detect things like mood and intent. And again, that's more context to add to the algorithms to process what you're asking, right? And that all can matter, you know, in terms of how it's going to process the information.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're getting to a pretty interesting age with these AI technologies. And, you know, if you look at the Viv video, and we talked about this a little bit too, what they're doing over there, their system's the same way. It's designed to actually not only just parse the language and then, you know, map it to some sort of predefined response, it's designed to take all the individual elements within the thing you just said, break those apart, go out and figure out what services you could possibly be referencing, and then reassemble all that and basically write on the fly programming and a decision tree on how it needs to respond and react based
on
the combination of keywords. And it does this all in, you know, milliseconds.
You know, this, the only thing that concerns me about this is how potentially difficult it would be for a third-party developer to integrate this, the proper types of
preferences and parameters. Did you watch the Viv video?
No.
So they built a whole third-party API system, and basically it's not really that difficult, because what you do is you open up endpoints and reactions based on specific like key inputs.
Well, okay. So what I'm thinking of is in back with Kayak, right? So
sure.
You're looking for a flight for Kayak, and you say, "Hola Siri, I want a flight to Chicago for such and such
week.
Date
next and, week in the morning."
Yeah. Okay. So that's cool. That's flashy, and you can do that, and that's fine. But then you get into those preferences like, I don't want any red eyes. I don't want to land past this point. I don't want to spend any more than this much money.
No layovers.
I prefer this airport, but if the price is too expensive, then maybe I'll go to these other airports.
Correct.
So, and you can open up a lot of preferences within Kayak, and I'm just using that as an example because you can really drill down.
Those preferences though. Vocal IQ would store those preferences for you and remember that when it's interacting with.
But those preferences, one, they change, and two, I don't necessarily need to have access to all of those preferences every time I'm doing something, because sometimes I know specific dates, sometimes I want to do a range of dates. I mean, there are a lot of different things that you can drill down on, and I'm wondering, is that something that the third-party developer needs to expose, or is that
those are just endpoints. Those are just data points in a data set.
And so they just expose those as data points, and then does the Vocal IQ technology or whatever, is that what determines what they should expose to you?
It can query Kayak and ask, well, again, no, the Vocal IQ system would eventually learn your preferences and then would bring back a result. And if you don't like that result, then you could say, no, you know what? I don't want a red eye this time.
I don't know. It sounds really blue sky. I hope it works. Maybe Kayak is too heavy.
It's designed to be a more human interaction. It's like it would be like calling up your travel agent. It'd be the same experience you'd go through with a travel agent, right? The travel agent is going to have your, if you use the same one all the time, it's going to have your preferences and your travel history. And if you call them up and say, "Hey, I need to schedule a trip next week. I need a flight to Chicago." They're going to come back on the phone and say, "Okay, well, I know last time you went, you wanted to go in the morning. Do you want to go in the morning again?" Or if you have already told them the morning, then they'll say, "Okay, you know, I know that last time we put you on American. Well, do you want to go on American again?" And the system can ask you all those same questions again.
Yeah, I'm just curious to know. So I guess those sorts of preferential things, those are all exposed by the assistant technology and not so much the apps, right?
Right.
Okay.
Correct.
That would be cool. I mean, honestly, Kayak it'll take like an hour or two to spend some quality time with Kayak and actually plan out a trip, right? So it would be great if I could fire off a command to Siri and tell her, "Hey, I need to do this trip," and it takes 2 minutes, maybe 30 seconds of conversing, and then she just takes care of it. That would be really
you can
cool.
imagine the interaction,
that'd be awesome.
Right? I need a flight to Chicago next week.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hey, okay. Did you want to travel? You know, what time of day did you want to travel? You know, or if you say it already, "Hey, I need a flight to Chicago, you know, on Tuesday morning." Great. Then she already knows, okay, I noticed last time you went, we put you on American, or your favorite airline is American. You want me to check them first? Yeah, please. Or no, I don't care which airline. Okay.
Sure. Yeah, it'd be cool. The only thing that,
the cheapest flight I found was blah, blah, blah at this time. Oh no, that's too early. Okay. Well, how about 9:30 for, you know, this price?
Yeah.
Like, oh, that sounds great.
Book it. I see what you mean.
Okay. Do you need a hotel? No, not this time. Okay, thanks. Do you want me to? Okay, great. I'm going to put it on your credit card ending in, your Visa ending in, blah, blah, blah. Is that okay? No, please use my American Express. Oh, okay, I'll use the American Express. Hey, your flight's been booked. You should be getting an email confirmation in a couple minutes.
That'd be
great.
Nice.
Thanks, Siri.
And what would be even cooler is if the email confirmation came in right away and she says, "Your flight's been booked and
your
email confirmation is already here."
And the confirmation number is XYZ
right.
PDQ.
But it's Apple, and they won't read your email. So
there's no reason to not read your local email.
Well, yeah. I suppose that's true.
That's going to be the biggest challenge Apple is going to have with this whole system. Is a lot of the partners are going to want access to retain the data that's being transferred back and forth, and Apple's going to be reluctant to give it up. So that's going to be the biggest challenge from Apple's perspective is, you know, like they're going to say, "Well, Kayak, you can't, you know, we'll pass you an Apple Pay. You got to implement Apple Pay for the payments because we're not going to pass you credit card data, or they're going to pass the minimal amount of data that is required to complete the transaction." Right.
Right.
And Kayak's going to want access to other data that Apple may not want to give them. So that's Apple's biggest challenge, I think, in this whole race. I don't think it's, you know, putting together the technology or figuring out the context stuff or any of those sorts of things. I think it's going to be more in those third-party integrations. But we'll know more at WWDC because the rumor is Apple has a Siri API opened up. My guess, though, is that it's going to be very much a one-way API. In terms of, you know, like Apple's going to define, just like they have done with the operating system, you know, you have access to these things and that's it.
Yeah.
And I think developers will likely complain a little bit about, "Oh, well, that's not enough." Just based on history.
Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't surprise me at all.
You know, and then Apple will fire back and say, "Hey, this is about maintaining privacy and security."
Yeah, and look, do you want the money or not?
So, yeah, it'll be interesting.
Yep, it will be. I just want it to remember when I correct her.
again, that's part of the vocal
that's
IQ.
That's part of vocal
stuff.
IQ.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's where when I'm saying like, oh, I want weather for Pismo Beach, and she thinks it's with a Z, and I go and I tap it and I correct it with an S, and she actually figures it out. I would like it for her to remember that, so I don't have to keep saying Pismo Beach.
Yep.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it is
she
what
needs
it
to
is.
Be. She needs to be about 50 times smarter, and yes, hopefully that's what's happening.
That would be nice. Let's see here. Lightning to headphone adapters have begun appearing on, let's see, where was this?
It was out of China.
Yeah.
There was a tech conference.
Yeah. Is that the same one where the little Asimo robot showed up?
Yes.
Oh, Asimo showed up?
No, Asus is doing
Asus.
A $600 personal robot.
Oh, nice. $600 for Asimo?
No, it's not Asimo. It's a different thing.
Okay.
But sorry, it's
mixed up the names.
It's pretty, I think it's more capable than Osmo almost.
Okay. So, but the adapter thing, I would assume it has to have a DAC in there, right? And it has volume up, down, and a center button, and it looks like a pack of gum.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of a pain in the butt. So that'll be nice.
Yeah, and you know, when I saw those, I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And then my next thought was, wow, that's a really crappy place to put the headphone controls. Because if your iPhone is in your pocket or bag.
Yeah, you're right.
Now to use the controls, you have to pull your iPhone out.
Yep. No, you just use your Apple Watch. Obviously. No, I think this
what
is...
What was I thinking?
These are more... I think they're prototypes. These, I mean, they're not for sale, right? You can't buy these?
No, you can't buy these.
So I'm guessing that these are some prototype things that they're just figuring out.
Yeah, it came out at... It was at Computex.
Yeah, and what is that?
And I'm sorry, I said China, but it was Taiwan. It's a Taiwanese tech conference.
Okay. Yeah, so I would imagine that when these things do come out, the typical one would be just a little cable with a tumor on it that you would plug your headphones into, and then your headphones would take care of all the clicking of buttons and that sort of thing.
So anybody who's been to the whole Chinese Taiwanese section of like
CES,
I mean, this is where this thing came out of. You know, basically the kind of place that this thing came out of.
Yeah, the junk aisles.
Yeah. I'm guessing. It's, you know, they're hedging their bets and on the rumors, and they're going to be first to market with one of these, and it'll be OEM'd to like, you know, everybody and their uncle who wants to make a headphone dongle.
Right.
Yeah.
So my guess is they were showing off to say, look, we have this ready to go, you know, when you want it, we can start producing these things, you know, overnight. And so it'll be, you know, somebody like Belkin or you know, whoever is going to call these guys up and go, okay, we need to start making these. And they may tweak the case design a little bit or something like that. But overall, you know, it's like we're ready to roll.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So it's a smart move.
Yeah. The minute that Apple, you know, announces the 7 and it doesn't have a headphone jack, this is the company you call.
Mm-hmm. I guess.
You know.
I guess you'd call them. Yeah. So we have...
Zenbo is the name of the little Asus robot, by the way.
Oh, Zenbo?
Okay. Yeah, it's got like an LCD face. It looks like a Luxo iMac.
Yeah.
Oh, it does.
It's got a round ball BB-8 base with like two big tires on the sides, and then it has like a gooseneck and then a round oval LCD on the top that displays the eyes and the mouth.
I guess
and
it's also
it has a voice interface.
And the voice is so annoying.
It will follow you around. You can call it to you. I think it has like facial recognition technology. So tell who you are.
Yeah, I mean, the concept is really cool.
Yeah, they're going to sell a metric crud ton of them at $600 bucks to people who just want like a little personal home robot, even if it doesn't really do much. But it looks like it can do some things. You know, it can take, I think it can take photos. I think it can,
it can
control your home automation. Yeah, search the internet. They're showing that it can do e-commerce. We'll see how well that works.
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. All right, we've got a lot more to talk about, but first, I'd like to talk about our wonderful sponsor, Atlassian, because today it seems that nearly anything is possible, and if you can dream it, a team of great people can actually build it. So how do you go about bringing everyone together to create what's next? Team up with Atlassian, makers of collaboration software that lets teams work and communicate better together. With their suite of collaboration software, you can assign, track, and manage tasks for any project, no matter how complex. That's the clarity of Jira. Create and share content, organize results, and bring team members up to speed. That's the flexibility of Confluence. Instant message or video chat with your team from any device. That's the freedom of HipChat. Test, review, and manage code in real time. That's the power of Bitbucket. And the cool thing about Atlassian is that I actually had a chance to use Jira last summer. And that's because NASA extensively uses many of Atlassian's products to build software to do some seriously cool stuff. So while I was there, I actually used Jira to help keep track of issues that I was working on while at JPL. And overall, it helped everyone on the team be more productive and get software out the door more quickly. So visit Atlassian.com and see how Jira, Confluence, HipChat, and Bitbucket give your team everything you need to organize, discuss, and complete shared work. Atlassian, helping teams everywhere team up to create what's next. That's Atlassian.com. Check them out. They have some really cool stuff. All right, and with that, iPhone 7 rumors, and the best rumor, I think, that it has come out about the iPhone 7 is that it seems that Apple's going to be getting rid of the 16 gigabyte base storage model. And moving it, finally, bumping down to 32.
Woo!
Or bumping up. And
that would be, yes, yes.
Please. Still not enough.
Oh, it's fine.
But giving people a 16 gigabyte iPhone.
That was a crime.
Criminal. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it'll be 32, 128, and 256, it seems.
Wait, say that again?
32, 128, mm-hmm. and then 256.
You think so?
Well, that's what the rumors say.
I'm thinking 32, 64, 128.
Yeah, that could be two. I don't know which, because the 256 is a rumor too, right?
Yes.
So yes, that is. They're going to bump 256 on the high end. And I've heard everything from, the 256 is only going to be on the Plus to, you know, other things. So it's unclear. I'm curious to see how they'll break it down.
Yeah. Well, we've seen this from two different sources now. And TrendForce has said that they're not sure that this applies to the smaller iPhone.
Right.
They believe that the 256 gigabyte high-end capacity is yet to be confirmed for the, or is only confirmed for the Plus model.
So, could it end up being 32, 64, 128 for the 7, and then 32, 128, 256 for the Plus, or... I think that'd just be confusing. I'm hoping the way confusing. You described it, Michael, is the way it is across the board, where it's 32, 128, 256 are the breakdowns.
It's probably not going to be that way. It's probably going to be 32, 64, 128 for the iPhone 7, which, yeah, okay, it might be a little bit confusing, which is a bummer for sure. But I'm not concerned. I'll probably...
Apple is just seriously pissing me off because they're going to make me buy a freaking Plus and I don't want it.
You're going to get a 256? Is that why?
If there's only 256? If 256 and dual cameras are only available on the Plus, that's going to be a hard thing to resist.
The storage? You need the storage?
Well, plus the dual lenses. Half of it is because I know people are going to ask me for the podcast all kinds of things about the dual lens system.
Mm-hmm.
How does it work? Does it take great pictures? You know, so I feel like somewhat pressured to get it. I really don't want the large size phone.
Hmm.
And then if they throw on top of that, the only way to get more storage is that, then yeah, it may push me over the edge and I might just bite the bullet.
But it's
I'm starting
more
to feel that way
with
the rumors.
Huh? More moolah, though.
I might suffer. Well, again, I have a business reason for probably needing to do it.
Yeah. And does your tax person laugh at you every time? Does your tax person laugh at you every time when you tell them, oh, yeah, that iPhone is for business?
No.
No, I get it. I'm hoping that they do bump it down and it's the same way because I'm on a 128 gig iPhone 6 right now, and that is perfect for me. I don't need anything larger. I would like to spend a little bit less money this next time around. Although, honestly, I'm not sure I'm going to be getting the 7. I may just wait for the 8 just because.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the rumor is this year we'll see incremental improvements, and then next year is going to be the big one because it's the 10-year anniversary of the iPhone.
Right, yeah, they're going to skip the S cycle.
Yeah, so if they do that, if it's not a huge thing, then I'll probably just buy a new Apple Watch.
And I'm predicting that's permanent.
Yeah, a tick-tick-tock?
Not a tick-tick-tock. I'm predicting that there'll still be a talk, but that the days of the S numbering are over.
That'd be nice.
And that they're moving to about an 18-month refresh cycle for the talk.
Hmm.
So I think they're going to next year switch to the 8, and then 18 months later will be the 9, and then 18 months later will be a 10. But the 9 will still be a talk cycle. A talk, is that right?
Yep.
Ticks are the big ones. Will still be a talk cycle where there won't be a major design change, but there will be, you know, some internal changes.
Yep, yep. Here's one.
But that's just my theory. I don't know. It seems like if they're going to skip the S cycle and go from 7 to 8, they might as well just continue that trend, especially if the other rumor holds true that, you know, major refresh cycles are going to be 3 years apart.
That'd be
which
fine.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, it makes sense to me too. It's not like it was 10 years ago when everything was so brand new and every time a new feature came out, it was a big thing.
Man, 10 years ago. It was 10 years ago almost.
It was almost 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I remember it was funny. I remember walking around outside of Moscone in San Francisco with Dave Hamilton. It was the day before the keynote in 2007, and he was saying, "No, Apple's not going to introduce a phone. They're not going to do it."
You know, and I was walking around with friends the day before, and one of them was like, "Hey, look at the Treo I just bought," and I'm like, "You just wasted money." I'm like, no, and I'm like, "No, seriously, Apple's going to announce a phone tomorrow." "No, they're not," and then the next day, they're like, "Well, crap, I wasted my money."
Yeah. And then other friends who said, "Oh, they'll never sell a million of those things. They're stupid."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's fun. Good times. Amazon, they want, quote, acceptable business terms to offer Prime Video on Apple TV.
I do not understand. If someone can explain this one to me in any way, shape, or form that makes sense...
I smell BS.
That I can't counter, then I'd love that.
So the first one that is dumb, and I know that you're going to counter for me, is you just can't get that Prime app on iOS because of the fees that Apple wants.
Yeah, they have a just Prime app on iOS already.
Yeah, they do. They already have it on the iPhone and the iPad.
Yep.
No problemo. Okay. Now, here's the only thing that I could come up with, maybe, is Apple wants some kind of the cut that Amazon would get from selling the actual Apple TV hardware on Amazon is too low. So they don't.
That's not what they're saying.
That's not what they're saying.
He said, we only want to sell devices that have the Prime app on them.
Right.
And the only reason the Prime app isn't on Apple TV is because they're not making it for Apple TV.
Right.
So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
Well, he says that it's because there aren't acceptable business terms. And the only thing that...
Meaning selling, if they sell Prime subscriptions in-app on the Apple TV, which is the only way they can do it on the Apple TV because there's no browser. So this is the only thing that I can think of.
True, yeah.
Is the issue is there's no browser on the Apple TV. So unlike the Amazon Prime app on iOS, they can tell you to go over to Safari and sign up for Prime.
Mm-hmm.
They can't do that on the Apple TV, which would mean maybe in his mind he's thinking, well, then we're being forced to use in-app purchase on the Apple TV, in which case Apple takes 30% of the in-app purchase price on the recurring Prime subscription, so that's burdensome.
Now, and I have a workaround for that. When you want to purchase something, like you want to purchase a Prime account or you want to purchase a movie rental, then the app on the Apple TV pushes a notification to your iPhone,
right,
and you do the purchase there.
Right. Or how about this? You can make commerce apps for the Apple TV. Okay. This is a big stretch, but how about put Amazon app on the Apple TV as well and just push people to the Amazon app to buy on the Apple TV?
Yeah. There you go.
Because those are credit card transactions. Those aren't in-app purchases.
Yeah.
I mean, they're standard credit card transactions.
It's a bummer, but
do you know how many people would actually sit on their couch and purchase stuff off Amazon from their Apple TV if they could? I'm betting it's
especially if the other thing they'll never do is integrate Apple Pay, but especially if they integrated Apple Pay.
Yeah.
But even with credit card, people will do it because the credit card's on file with Amazon anyway. So you log into your account and it's a one-click buy anyway.
Yeah, it's just done.
It's easier to buy something on Amazon than it is to cancel that order you accidentally pressed buy on. There are more steps to cancel. It's fun. But I guess that's nice. Usually I don't misclick the button.
But yeah, so I mean, the workaround would be they build not only a Prime Video app, but they also just build an Amazon app at the same time.
Yeah.
And then problem solved. It's just like, oh, here, you want to order Prime? Just open up the Amazon app and, you know, order Prime or rent your video and then come back here. And I mean, it'd be the same experience that you have on an iOS device like an iPad or an iPhone.
Yep.
But I mean, so who freaking cares? In the meantime, you know, 90% of us will just use the Prime Video app on our iOS device and AirPlay it.
Yep. Yeah.
Honestly, I don't. There are so few things on Prime Video that I can't get on other services like Netflix.
So in my mind, they're just annoying their customers that have Apple TVs and leaving potential money on the table.
I'm not that annoyed because, like I said, I don't use it.
No, you know, but I mean, we're not annoyed, but there are some people that maybe have an Android phone and an Apple TV and that's what they want to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. There has to be something we don't know.
It's another.
Because it makes no sense at all.
They're sour grapes. Yeah. That's all it is. It's just
stupid.
He's hiding behind. It's like a veiled attempt to like throw the issue back at Apple. But really, Apple isn't the problem. It's Amazon is not winning the war. Apple's going to get into streaming video, you know, a streaming video service pretty soon. So that's another threat. You know, the Fire Phone tanked. You know, we can go on and on. The biggest thing I think Apple or Amazon has going right now is the good buzz for the Echo and Alexa. And, you know, come a couple weeks or a week from now, Apple's probably going to be threatening that too. So
Yep.
Yeah.
Apple and Amazon have never had a good relationship. You know, there's the whole book thing. There's sour grapes over that. You know, it's not even like Apple and Google. You know, Apple and Google can recognize, okay, we can fight this battle over here, but we do have relationships where we depend on each other. And those are important too, and we can work through those separately. I don't think Bezos can separate.
No, he doesn't get the frenemy stuff. Concept.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, last. Apple has updated their official WWDC app with a new look, and most importantly, Apple TV compatibility.
Woo!
So now you can watch your WWDC sessions that are pre-recorded, as well as the live ones. It seems as though they will be not only streaming, I would expect to see them stream it, the keynote on,
oh, yeah. They'll
on,
stream
the,
it.
On the app. I'm thinking we're definitely going to see separately on the Apple TV. We'll just see the Apple Events app streaming that.
Sure.
But I think more importantly is the developer sessions will be streamed through the app, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So.
Oh, I don't know about the sessions.
I think that's what I read. I think
that would be new. I don't think they generally stream them. I know that they will, once they're recorded, they'll post them pretty quickly. But I don't remember them actually streaming live, you know, at the time.
Yep, live streaming sessions with Apple engineers. Yeah, so that'll be
good. Did they do that last year?
I don't think they did. I think that'll be new.
That's new.
Because they, there are a lot of people who want
to
get there.
And be pumping out. I think that was why they never did it in the past. I mean, you've got how many sessions going on concurrently?
True.
Lots of bandwidth. Crazy.
But it's nice for the developers because a lot of them can't get there.
Yeah.
Okay, and with that, let's do some picks and get out of here. So, Jeff, what do you got for us?
I have a backpack for you today.
Ooh.
Yes, it's from a company called Lander, and it's the Temp 20-liter backpack. And it's you can pick it up off Amazon for like $99. And the whole outside of it looks like one of those waterproof duffel bags that you would take, say, like on a river rafting trip. And it has lash points all the way around, and it has a handle on every side, so you can pick it up from any side.
Nice.
And so it has the shoulder harness with a sternum strap. And on the inside, you know, it's padded, lined pockets and a couple organizer pockets in there. And what I found is that it's great for around town stuff.
Mm.
Because a lot of times you're out and about, you're walking around, doing whatever, and it rains for a little bit. And you just, even though the day pack or bag you might be carrying your iPad in is going to be enough, you just worry. Because like if you're like me and you're carrying an iPad Pro with a smart keyboard and an Apple Pencil and a few other things, that's a lot of money in your bag. And you don't want it to get wet. So it's a really durable bag. And I've been playing around with it a little bit, and it's been holding up very nicely in the surprise rains I've been getting in Boulder. Mm. And yeah, so I look at it as a really nice urban bag, but Temp says that in addition to that, you know, if you're going backcountry on some trip where you need to have your tech gear with you, then you can use it for that too. And they make a 25-liter bag also, but the 20-liter, it feels kind of big for an iPad Air or a 9.7-inch iPad Pro, but it feels awesome with the 12.9-inch iPad Pro.
Nice. So this is the Lander Temp 20-liter.
The 20-liter.
Gotcha.
Yep.
$99 on Amazon.
Yep. And it's Prime also. So free shipping.
Cool. Sounds good. Adam, what do you got for us?
I have a game called Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons. It is $4.99. It's been around for a while. This is an older game. I guess it was available on consoles for a long time, and they brought it to iOS. And it is basically a... To me, it was done by a Swedish film director, and the whole thing, what I like about it, is it sort of plays out like a film. It's very cinematic in kind of its scale. But you play these two brothers. It's a little hard for me to understand the story because they basically talk in gibberish. You know, it's like a made-up language that they're talking. You have to kind of infer from what's going on in the scene. But basically, it seems like their father has become ill for some reason, and you have to go on this quest, I think, to find the cure for their dad. So you're these two brothers, an older one and a younger one. And what's cool is it's kind of a series of puzzles and challenges, and you have to use both characters to complete each kind of task that you run across. And so it's got like a dual joystick, on-screen joystick thing. Huh. About my only complaint is the on-screen controls can be a little bit clunky. I've read this is a lot better on a console where you actually have a physical stick. So I don't know. You know, I should probably try to use my gamepad. I think it probably has the gamepad support, and I haven't played around with that. But other than that, it's really gorgeous and beautiful game, and I'm enjoying playing it. I don't know how far in I am. I think I'm at like third chapter or fourth chapter at this point. It's not super challenging, so if you're not a really heavy gamer, I don't know if the gameplay has been sort of made a little bit easier for iOS because of some of the controls or if this is how it played out on the console. It does feel a little bit simple to me. And I'm not a heavy gamer, so I would say it's intermediate level, but it's definitely not, you know, super hard to complete each task. Sometimes, you know, you're left scratching your head to kind of figure out a puzzle or something like that. But I've been able to play through it pretty quickly. But it's only $5. It's $4.99. And, I've been playing it for several hours at this point. So it's definitely worth the money. And just for the visual aspect of it, it's really beautiful. And it's kind of a fantasy adventure kind of game. So I'm liking it a lot.
Cool.
Cool.
And I gave you the link to the website, which is brothersthegame.com. But for some reason, their CSS isn't loading for me, so the site looks like crap.
Huh.
And I don't know.
Oh, yeah. It looks like crap.
Because it's so old, or what's going on there. But
I pulled up the... I got the link, so I'll be...
Yeah, I gave you the App Store link and the website. But cool. If you go to the website, I think something happened and their CSS is broken, and it's probably no one knows because it's, like I said, an older game. So
nice. All right. So my pick this week is kind of a double single pick, depending on what you want. So I have the Space Black or Space Gray. I don't remember. The aluminum.
Watch is Space.
Depends black. On which one you have.
I have the aluminum black. I have the black aluminum.
That's the Space Black.
I got this.
Mr. Fancy.
Yeah.
I regret it totally, honestly, because it's been a pain to find something that goes well with it, because most bands have a silver, the traditional aluminum
lug,
and it just doesn't look right when you use the aluminum lug. So, originally I ordered the Elander 42 millimeter top grain leather strap. And so I guess part of this is going to be telling you what I have experienced with this stuff, buying watch bands, because, so my first thing that I did is I bought lugs. Right. So the lugs I bought were the Lovett stainless steel watch lugs, and those were $15. And that's a pretty fair price. And those are black, and they do match the case of the watch.
Nice.
What I did then is order a third party, sort of unrelated watch band from Amazon. And the width of it, however, although it worked. Typical watch bands will work with these watch lugs for the most part. It's just not wide enough to look good on the 42 millimeter. And I would guess even on the 38, it still looks a little bit small.
Oh, wow.
So it didn't really work well. So my advice is, measure, the width of like your fluoroelastomer band and try and find something that's pretty close to that, or simply go for something that is built for the Apple Watch, because there are a lot of third party bands out there now. So what I purchased was the Elander 42 millimeter top grain leather strap. And that looks really good. It's like a suede material. It's probably, not real suede. It's really cheap, honestly. But it looks good. Looks nice. It's a nice color. It feels nice. It's very comfortable. $20. However, the one that I'm looking at comes with the silver lugs. So what I did is transplanted.
Sharpie?
Yeah, Sharpie. No, I transplanted the lugs from
actually,
the other band.
That might work.
It would probably rub off after a while.
You just need to put it on the edges.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, maybe you could do a Sharpie. I don't know.
Try it out. Someone let us know.
Okay. I moved the lugs over, and it looks good. So I would recommend next, if you haven't bought an Apple Watch yet, first go for the
So you said the leather
silver.
Was good or cheap? I didn't understand that part of the review.
It is, yeah, thank you. It is an inexpensive band that isn't super high quality, but it feels nice and it looks nice, but it's also you're paying $20 for the band and the lugs together.
How long has it lasted? How long have you had it?
I ordered it on March 5th.
And you've had it about a month.
Huh?
You've had it about a month? Three weeks?
March.
Oh. Okay. So several months. And it's holding up?
So yeah, it's holding up. I mean, there's a little bit of a crease where I latch it. Right?
Oh, sure.
But otherwise, it's pretty much holding up. I mean, for $20...
Well, that's the deal. That's what I'm wondering. Because I've been really wanting to get some sort of leather strap, but I don't know which one to get because every time I look at one, it's like, oh, it's cheap. It didn't last.
It's not really splitting
apart.
It looks
cruddy after a month.
The only it has darkened a little bit.
Well, that's normal leather, though.
Yeah, it's aging. It doesn't look like crap. So, and it hasn't like split apart or anything.
Do you think it's real leather or is it pleather?
Let me see.
Claim top grain leather.
Top grain leather. Yeah, it says. Yeah.
All right, so
that's what it says. So the only thing I'll say is I have not left this on when I run or do any exercise because it would get all moist. So I switch back to my rubber or my fluoroelastomer band. So, it hasn't really been subjected to a lot of moisture. I would, it's probably gotten a little bit wet from hand washing, but other than that, $15 or $20, if you have the silver case, you're good to go. You get this and you're good to go. But, otherwise the Lovett, I'm really happy with the Lovett, watch lugs as well. So. With that, you can find all of the show notes and the picks at theiosshow.com. Write a review in iTunes or tell a friend. We appreciate that. Feedback at theiosshow.com is the address to which you can send your questions, comments, and feedback. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen is at the Maccast, maccast.com, at Maccast on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And Jeff Gamet, he's at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, TMO Daily Observations podcast. Check that out. It's every weekday, and it's awesome.
Why, thanks.
And he's on Twitter, at Jay Gamet on Twitter as well. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
It's always awesome, every single week.
And I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter as well. And with that, we'll see you next time on The iOS Show.
An iPod, a phone, an iPod. internet community.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No.